So what you should have in front of you is a summary sheet that summarizes the background and the issues that we have presented to you on this topic throughout 2019. Our staff recommendations, a description of the public process that we used, and some draft motion language for you to consider. And then there's an attachment to your summary sheet that includes two proposed language changes that we are recommending that we will go through in more detail in our presentation. We will also summarize for you the public comments that we heard, which in turn is what led to the proposed changes that we have for you today. So just to recap what the key management issues are, we have had a shift in the distribution of primarily humpback whales off the West Coast in recent years. The theory is that they typically will forage on krill that are more readily available along the shelf break out to about 100 fathoms. And in the last 5 or 6 years, they've been foraging on anchovy, which are closer to shore, which puts them right on top of where our crab fishery takes place, which is from the shore out to about 60 fathoms. Relative to the management of the crab fishery, the whale interactions are rare, and they are difficult to estimate and predict. We've been tracking really closely what has been happening on the East Coast with the North Atlantic right whale, as well as up in Alaska with sperm whale issues. And the conclusion we've come to is that relative to gear regulations, particularly pot gear, there may not be a one-size-fits-all solution for all the different fisheries. As we also presented to you in October, there is also a need to reconcile the standards that are used by NOAA Fisheries in the Marine Mammal Protection Act compared to the Endangered Species Act, as they have two different standards for management. This is an updated map that is from NOAA, produced in 2016, that shows, based on whale surveys that have occurred in April through October, where the whales are distributed off the Washington coast. And then to the right of that is the crab fishing effort by our Washington crab fleet. I'm not sure how well it shows up, but there is this gray dotted line in the background here, kind of through that yellow colored area. And just for reference, that represents 500 meters, or about 273 fathoms. So again, our crab fishery is typically shoreward of that area.
Commissioner Thorburn.
The colors on the densities, do you know what the densities represent per square? Whatever?
Yes. Yes. So those,
don't give it per square fathom.
Yeah.
Though,
yeah.
No, those are individual whales that have been tagged and tracked. And so the densities represent individuals per square kilometer.
Okay. And so red is, do you know what it is, or?
Yes, so the red is the high density, and yeah, then the blue is the low.
Do you know the number, just to get an idea of?
I don't have that with me.
Okay, curious. Thank you.
So this is an update that was produced by NOAA in 2018. NOAA produces an annual report on large whale entanglements, and then they specifically produce one on West Coast fisheries and West Coast whale entanglements. So just for reference, through the 2000 through 2013 time period, all West Coast fisheries combined, that includes gill net fisheries, traps for crab, sablefish, shrimp, and lobster, had an average of about 10 large whale entanglements across all of those fisheries per year. There were some notable increases beginning in 2015 as that number rose from 10 to 50 and then 48 in 2016. And then as you'll see here, the West Coast total of 31 in 2017 and 46 in 2018.
I'll briefly review the actions that WDFW took in 2019 in response to this issue. So we've briefed the commission in January, May, and October. And then we also held stakeholder workshops. So these were open to anybody interested in the Dungeness crab fishery, including license holders, processors, and buyers. We did that in March, April, September, and November. At those stakeholder workshops, we discussed whale entanglement issues, the status of the whale stocks, and spent some time reviewing and discussing potential management measures. In July, WDFW implemented an emergency rule to reduce the pot limit by about one-third. We met with our crab advisors on August 15th to develop proposed rules and then filed the CR 102 here in September and then notified our license holders in October about what those specific rule changes were and opportunities for public comment. On November 6th, we held an industry meeting that also included a public hearing on the proposed rules and took input there. So the first rule change that we're proposing is to require only the amount of line necessary. So given the extreme fishing conditions off Washington, which include strong tides and currents and seasonal variability, specifying the exact amount of line that would be needed and putting that into rule language would be challenging, if not dangerous. So what we've done in the proposed rules here is implement the recommendations from the Washington Whale Entanglement Working Group. They developed best practices guidelines for fishermen to use, and one of those best practices guidelines is, and from the guidelines, it says to use only the amount of line necessary to compensate for tides, currents, and weather. The next rule change is to reduce the risk of whales becoming entangled in commercial crab gear simply by reducing the amount of lines in the water. And this rule change would go into place beginning May 1, which is reflective of the peak time when whales are off the Washington coast. This would be implemented with a similar requirement to have a summer buoy tag. So beginning May 1, license owners with a permanent pot limit of 500 pots would be allowed to use 330 pots, and license owners with a 300 pot limit would be allowed to use 200 pots. Currently, license owners are issued buoy tags at the beginning of the season. This is really how we enforce our pot limit. Untagged gear is then unlawful, so pots in excess of 500 or 300 are unlawful. So anybody that wants to continue fishing after May 1 will need to purchase a summer buoy tag. It's separate and different from the winter buoy tag and similar to the regular season. Any gear after May 1 that doesn't have this summer buoy tag would be unlawful. And this would by implementing this new pot limit and new buoy tag issuance in May, it would remove the need for the second period for replacement tags. So there would be no replacement tags after May 1. On the next rule change, thank you. So the next rule change is to require line marking that's specific to Washington. So data that's collected by NOAA entanglement responders show that about half of the entanglements that occur off the West Coast can't be identified to a particular fishery or even a particular state. That makes it really difficult for us to know whether or not our management measures are effective. It helps us identify tools that would help reduce the risk further entanglements and monitor compliance with our state incidental take permit. This rule change will require that line be marked in red in at least two places, one near the top at the buoy and one near the bottom near the pot. And we are coordinating this effort with California and Oregon to ensure that it is unique to Washington, which will help NOAA and Department of Fish and Wildlife in Washington assess the effectiveness of our management tools. So based on the public comment we received, we are recommending an effective date of December 1, 2020, and this would avoid mid-season implementation. And we think it will provide enough notice to our stakeholders and operators in time to get their gear meeting these regulations by next season, the start of next season. Thank you. And when we came to you in October, our rule language said it would be marked, the red line would be 18 inches. There's been additional public comment that suggests that our stakeholders would be more comfortable with 12 inches, and so the proposed rule language reflects that input. It's.
Pardon me, Commissioner Baker?
This is just a question.
Sure.
If we require the marking, and if it's required to be in two places on the line, one about a fathom down and one about a fathom up, and from our testimony, it sounded like marking these things is a bit of a chore. I mean, they have to, it's kind of hard to do. And then the question is, going back to one of the previous regs, where the length of the line changes given the conditions, is how they do this, they get out on the boat and they figure it all out and then they mark it there, or do they buy pre-marked line, or how do they do that? That's my question. Thank you.
Chair Crumpter, Commissioner Baker, we have worked with our stakeholders on that, and so they do have what's called shots of line. Hopefully Larry will make sure I get this right, but shots of line that they can add or remove. So if they're fishing in the deep, they're going to need a certain amount of line in the deep. They bring it in, they're going to have to take some of those shots off. The placement of these red markings through our discussions with stakeholders allows them to change those shots, so in a manner that's efficient as possible, so they won't have to remark it in season.
Okay. If I may add to that, excuse me, my microphone doesn't seem to be on. Thanks. So if I may add to that, there seem to be two different questions. One was relative to the only having the amount of line necessary and dealing with the removal of excess line, if you will, which is what I think Heather was addressing, is that they could remove shots of line as appropriate if they are moving their gear from deeper water to shallower water. The other part of your question is relative to the marking and the placement of them. And so our understanding, and again, we can be corrected, is that what is being proposed here would essentially have a mark in that first shot, the shot that's near the surface, and then the one that's down by the pot. In working with NOAA entanglement responders, there's theories relative to
how the whale actually becomes entangled in the gear. And the thought being that it's likely that the pot and the buoy are attached at the time of the entanglement and wraps around, but then it may snap off. It may be intentionally rubbed off by the whale, or it may come off as the whale continues to transit with the gear. So the idea is that the line may become snagged in the whale's baleen, particularly by the buoy, but then if the buoy is snapped off, then you would still have that portion of line, particularly at the top, that was attached to the buoy, that would then be visible to, that would have this marking on it.
Thank you.
Commissioner Linville.
I'm just curious about the difference between 12 and 18 inches, the concern around that. I'm just curious. What's the reasoning behind preferring 12 over 18?
Thanks. We've had quite a bit of discussion with our industry, and the thought originally had been ensuring that there was a continuous mark on the rope, on the line. And so we had thought about 18 if you... So there's different ways that they can mark their gear. They can mark it by painting it. They can actually weave a twine, colored twine, through their line, which would actually hold up a little bit better, takes a little bit more work. But the thought being that if they had 18 inches of line that they were weaving through, maybe only 12 inches of that would be visible. So then the discussion had centered around the costs associated with buying large spools of this line and having to attach it with 18-inch increments versus 12-inch increments. It was more of an efficiency. At the same time, NOAA, as well as our industry members, are actively testing the paint versus the weaving and different colors and different sizes and lengths, and thought that the 12 inches would be sufficiently visible, and 18 wasn't really necessary.
Thank you for that.
Okay. So this next rule change is really just a housekeeping change, and it just makes the rule specific to pots and removes the reference to ring nets. And so just in summary, the public comments that we heard throughout all of our stakeholder meetings and then specifically at our public hearing on September 6th, we heard that there was general support for the recommendation to use only the amount of line necessary. There was mostly support for pot limit reduction. You know, there's some who don't want to see a pot limit anytime, but there was also others that would like to see a pot limit in place year-round. We heard that there, from one person, that there would be adverse economic impacts from the pot limit reduction, and then this discussion on the concern with the 18 inches versus the 12 inches for the reasons for... that Michelle explained of why we shifted to the 12. And then also this general concern with implementing the line marking mid-season, but with a lot of support for continuing our discussions with stakeholders, our discussions with Oregon, California, NOAA, and implementing that in December 2020, this December. And then, yeah, again, more discussion on specific configurations of that line marking.
So just to summarize, the staff is recommending that you adopt the revisions as presented in the CR 102 you have in front of you for WACs 220, 340, 430, 435, and 480. except specifically to WAC 220, 340, 430, Section 6B, 1 and 2, adopt a line marking requirement of 12 inches and include an effective date of December 1, 2020. And that language is provided to you in Attachment 1 to our summary sheet for those modifications. The second recommendation is to delegate the rulemaking authority to the director specific to the coastal Dungeness crab fishery gear marking requirements. And the thought there is to have the commission make the policy decision and provide the policy guidance to the department and to industry that you support line marking and you support line marking requirement that is developed together with industry that works for them, but is also in coordination with NOAA Fisheries, Oregon, and California. We need some time to work with industry members and with the other states of Oregon and California, but by adopting the rule change today, that provides the signal that you're looking for that line marking requirement to be in place beginning at the start of next season. So that would hold everyone's feet to the fire, including ourselves, and provide adequate notice to the industry now that there will be a line marking requirement that will be in place for next season. We would have the commission's rule that you adopt, if you were to approve it, as described in the language before you as what would be in place unless the director through this delegated authority made a subsequent rule change that might be a different color, might be a different length or a different placement, if you will. But the intent of having this in place and having it there at the start of the next season is really what we're looking for the commission to adopt today.
Question regarding the manufacturers of the pot line, which used to be offshore, used to be from Asia primarily. I don't know where it comes from anymore. Have those companies stepped up at all with some type of painting opportunities that they can do while the line is crafted and spooled up so the fishermen don't have to do it?
Yes, thanks. Thanks for the question. We have been in close contact with England Marine. They've been attending our stakeholder workshops and have been working with our industry members, and including Larry Thievick, who's here today. Ideally, I think what we would have in place is a line that is unique to the Washington crab fishery that is readily available to our fishermen, but not to those of other states. And so we are trying to work closely with England Marine, with the distributors. We also want to make sure that it's our fishermen have readily access to purchase this and have some options for doing so. But at the same time, want to have something that is fairly specific so that it would be highly unlikely that fishers from other states would have that same marking.
Okay. Thank you. I guess I don't know how that relates to the line manufacturers, but I guess there's something in play here.
Yes, okay. So what we've heard is that they could actually develop a specific line for WDFW, for the Washington crab fishery. They can even weave in a line that says Washington crab fishery or something of that would be uniquely distributed to our fleet.
And you could, assuming that would be acceptable to you and management. Okay, well, that's great. Commissioner Graybill or Commissioner Thorburn?
This may be a really uninformed question because I don't know whether our permit holder or license holders distinguish among the estuaries and the coastal. Do we have license holders who are only coastal and these rule changes only apply to the coastal crabbery and not to the estuary crabbers. Is that correct?
Yes. So we have two Dungeness crab licenses, one that's specific to the coastal fishery. It does include the estuaries of Grace Harbor and Willapa Bay. It does not include Puget Sound or the Strait of Juan de Fuca. That is under the Puget Sound crab license.
And they will not need to comply with
that's these. Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Kehoe.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm prepared to make a motion, but I do have a couple of questions. So when the time is appropriate, I'd be happy to make the motion.
I see no other questions. Proceed.
Well, I have. Okay, so very good.
Public comment?
There is no public comment.
Yeah. This is just a decision.
So could you go to the slide proposed rule change number one? I can't see. Slide seven, I guess. Yeah, so... And you mentioned that this language was kind of cut and pasted from a best practices document that industry came up with, and I note that the language has in the proposed rule change. References the amount of line necessary. And so I know that there have been several comments, organizations. I know Per Se and Vessel Owners submitted a comment suggesting that the word reasonably be inserted before necessary. And I can tell you that that the word reasonably kind of used in a legal context is very it's used quite frequently, kind of the reasonable man. It's, you know, it's a reasonable standard. So my question would be, would there be any opposition from the department if we include the word reasonably before necessary?
Michelle?
Yes. Thank you, Commissioner Kehoe, for the question. No opposition from the department.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Anderson, and then back to Commissioner Kehoe, I expect.
Just as a quick question, but since the slide was brought back up, with regard to the rope that is used, is that a weighted rope or is that not? Are these weighted?
Lead core?
Lead core?
Yeah. Yes.
They are all lead core. Yes. Is that?
Not everyone.
Not everyone. There's three different types.
There's floating line as well.
So there's no requirement to use weighted line. And so some do and some don't.
It's probably beyond what can be changed now, but the was there any discussion about utilizing attached weights to keep a straight line and drop the line down in a tighter fashion like you do in a recreational fishery? Or is it just not practiced like that?
So do you want to answer? So that really has been a big part of the discussion of our whale entanglement working group. We've had folks from the NOAA disentanglement team attend those, and there's mixed feelings on whether or not weighted line is the right way to go. So it's been definitely been part of the discussion, but there's not enough known about the pros and cons of weighted line enough to make it a formal recommendation. I think it's something of interest to keep exploring.
Commissioner Kehoe, I suspect you want to make a motion, but I did want to let everyone know it's now 10:41, and Commissioner Smith just arrived.
A new record.
If there are no other questions, Mr. Chair, I'm prepared to
please do.
So I'm going to, I guess it's probably appropriate to do two separate motions. So I'll try the first one first.
So I move the commission adopt revisions as presented by staff in the CR 102 to WAC 220, 340, 430, WAC 220, 340, 435, and WAC 220, 340, 480, except for WAC 220, 340, 430, 6D, 1, and 2. Adopt the revisions displayed in Attachment A, which include an effective date of December 1, 2020, and a 12-inch marking requirement. And this is where I'm going to improvise a little bit. WAC 220, 340, 430, 6A, insert the word reasonably before necessary. And if there's a second, I'll speak.
We have a motion. Do we have a second? Yeah. Commissioner McIsaac, second the motion. Any further discussion? Seeing none.
Thank you. If I may speak to the motion.
Sure.
First of all, I want to thank the department on a number of fronts. First, being proactive on this, seeing what has taken place in the California fishery. That's absolutely what we did not want to have happen here. We're engaged now with NOAA in getting a permit, and we're taking proactive measures, and very importantly, too, in collaboration with industry. I think your flexibility with respect to the marketing requirement and willingness to postpone this until effective date, until next year, was well received by industry. So I want to applaud you for that. So, and then I think as far as my little tweak to the word reasonably, maybe it's kind of a legal bit of legal knees, wonkiness, whatever you want to call it, guilty as charged, but
I think it makes in my view, I think it makes it clearer, and it achieves the intent of the regulation. So, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Okay, regarding this motion, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. We are now motion number two.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chair, I move that the commission delegate the rulemaking authority to the director for the specific coastal Dungeness crab fishery gear marking requirements.
Second.
And I'd like to speak to that one as
sure.
Well.
We have a second by Commissioner McIsaac. Commissioner Kehoe.
Yeah, so, and I think, as demonstrated by your willingness to work with industry, with the understanding some of the questions by the commissioners about, maybe the manufacturing of line marking. I think in talking with folks that are involved in this fishery, we really don't know how this painting requirement is going to work. We don't know how long it's going to last. We don't know how effective it will be to actually see. So I think you've got these experts who can provide really good information, and I'm completely comfortable in delegating this further work to the director and the department to work with industry. And if you don't get it right, I have a feeling we're going to hear about it. But any event, so with that, I'm comfortable.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Oh, pardon me, Commissioner McKenzie.
One last thing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just add my compliments to the staff. At the highest level, getting out in front of this issue is very important. We have a conservation mandate here at the department. There's more whales out there. They're changing their migration patterns. We're doing something to benefit the whales. It put the crab fishery at risk. You all got out in front of that one as well and worked with people, and it's just an applaudable approach. Even down to your commission presentations that are excellent as normal. So my compliments to you and all who have been working with you on this. This is the kind of commission process that is really excellent.
Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. Commissioner Anderson.
Maybe you just...
Yeah, one second, Bob. After Commissioner Anderson.
Okay. I want to, beyond complimenting the department, I would like to compliment the commercial guys and gals, too, with regard to the engagement and the proactive nature of this. This kind of stuff is not easy when you're changing past practices and habits and engaging, you know, when, you know, it's supposedly your time to take off probably and rest, and instead you're still working. So I want to call them out, too.
I was just going to ask Commissioner McIsaac, as far as your comment about the excellent presentation, does it have anything to do with the fact that these folks are very experienced at the Pacific Council and their background and observing and participating?
Commissioner McIsaac will be happy to buy your ladies lunch.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to buy them lunch, but I think they're inherently talented, and I think that's the key to it.
Yes. Thank you. It's been a pleasure, girls. Nice job.